The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And today our veteran is a former Marine. Oops, you're never a former Marine. Al Pasquale is our guest today. And Al, welcome to Salute a Veteran Every Day.
Thank you much. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about growing up. And did you have an idea of going into the Marines, or is that?
I had no idea until, I guess, when I turned 17. I became disgusted with school, being very strict Italian Catholic family, et cetera, et cetera. The nuns, the Christian Brothers, and everything goes along with it. So I decided to leave school in my junior year, and I went to the Marine Corps recruiter when I turned 18 and said to them, could I become a Marine? And after discussions and proper documentation, I was allowed to raise my hand, not literally, but at that point, at my birthday, which was 24 October 1954, that's when I walked into the office of the Marine Corps recruiter in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where I'm from originally, born and raised. And then went home with that document. And my family was not too happy with that document that they were reading. So it was quite an event. And next thing I know, I am in a train going to Boston, Massachusetts for physical examination. At that point in time, all services from New England went to Boston, Mass., to get their physicals. And subsequent to that, they would go to their respective recruiting locations. In my case, it was Parris Island, South Carolina.
I've been there.
And I met my sand fleas for the first time.
Sand fleas.
Sand fleas. They are the... They are worse than... They are annoying, I guess. They don't bite, per se, but they are annoying.
We North Carolinians know about sand fleas.
Well, see, plus the fact I'm a displaced Yankee, as you can figure out, now living in Raleigh. But that was...
We accept you, Al.
Thank you. But there was that was February of 1955 when I first crossed the Mason-Dixon line, I guess you would say. So,
what did you think when you were first got in? Did you get in a bus to come down?
Well, actually, it was a train. The train ride from, like, it started from Boston, New York, Philadelphia. I believe it was Washington, D.C., and a couple of spots along the way. And then we landed, ended up in Yamasee, South Carolina.
Yamasee,
however you wish to pronounce it. It was like the middle of the night and very dark. And you were met by your drill instructors. See, each drill instructor has it's called a series. And they have, I guess, a 13-week cycle. But they still go through at that point in time.
Sure.
So we were greeted. Greeted is a very interesting word. I'll delete the expletives. Come on board. So for that first night, we were not put together as a platoon. A couple of days subsequent to that evening, we had 80 of us made up a platoon, a beginning session, if you will. A cycle. There were three cycles within boot camp at that point in time. So we're talking February 10th, 11th, 1955. And
let me back up to the train and the I imagine from the train they took you on a bus.
Well, they bus. It, oh, I, yeah. Thank you.
And tell me about meeting your DI.
that was a culture shock. You picture a young man like myself, 18 years old.
Yeah.
At peach fuzz, baby face. I got a picture right here in my hand, people. With this handsome-looking Marine. Oh my God, I used to look like that. And
they're still
one,
handsome
one of the
now.
First the bus ride from the embassy to get on board the base.
Mm-hmm.
And they in transit, you were told that there's only one way to get out off this base. And that's going through swamps,
mm-hmm.
which there are snakes and crocodiles and all kinds of vomit, if you will, that can eat you up. And it was just a culture shock, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then we got into it's called a receiving barracks, where you start the process of getting uniforms, haircuts. Well, the haircut, that was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a picture of this person with a DA. Full head of hair, curly, wavy, and we're in line, and everybody else is getting their haircuts, and you're looking and looking. Next thing you know, you're bald yourself.
Yeah.
And all began.
Was this still in the middle of the night?
This was subsequent to that.
Uh huh.
No, what happened that night? As I said, you went to they gave you a bed to sleep on.
Yeah.
A rack, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of days later, then your complement of DIs, which I had four at that time, I'm looking at the photos of Staff Sergeant at that time McNeevy, Staff Sergeant Hill, Staff Sergeant Scarborough, and Sergeant Fox. Now, the Staff Sergeant McNeevy, if I may digress for a moment, retired as a Sergeant Major of our Marine Corps, mm-hmm. served 40-plus years, ended up living in down in Jacksonville, North Carolina area. We met a couple of years ago when we kind of rekindled this meeting of ours,
the brotherhood.
Back in 1955.
Yeah.
And we lost him a couple of years ago due to a stroke, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Outstanding Marine.
Yeah.
So it was the beginning process, as I said, of boot camp. With the three cycles,
mm-hmm.
And you're learning.
Take
and
me
learning
through boot camp.
And learning.
Take me through boot camp.
Boot camp was.
Was it physical?
It was an event, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough. The attrition rate was an attrition rate. We lost 20 people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
60 graduated. I'm looking at this 60 of us in this photograph, which says Platoon 19, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Parris Island, South Carolina, and the date is May 6th, 1955. So it was 3 months that we, within a 3-month time frame, we went through various trainings, some of which became infantry, some went into administration, which I became. You are tested as to what they feel you're best suited.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And, but you, even if the, but every Marine has to learn the rifle and the.
Well, I mean,
weapons,
if I may,
right?
Basically, right from the 0311 is the MOS, which is the Military Occupational Specialty. It's called MOS.
Mm-hmm.
Every Marine is a rifleman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there has been instances in our history where the cooks pick up their M1 or their various weapons standing nearby in the event of a catastrophe, which happened quite often in Vietnam.
Sure.
Or you being overrun. You know, we need people.
Right.
The child can wait.
Everyone's a shooter.
Everyone's a Marine. Everyone's a rifleman. Yes.
So you were in Vietnam.
I was not.
You were not.
I was not in combat. I was a Vietnam era, Cold War era Marine.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone.
Sure.
But it didn't happen.
By this.
See, when you raise your hand to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States for all enemies, foreign and domestic, you raise your hand for such. So it's a blank check.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ordered to go, you go.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't my turn.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me about the DIs. My brother went through, and so he had a lot of wild stories.
In my time, I mentioned the Staff Sergeant Scarborough, may he rest in peace. this man, and I get a picture, he's a young kid from Rhode Island, baby face, Alfred Vincent Pasquale is my given name. Actually, the Italian pronunciation is Alfredo Vincenzo Pasquale.
Okay. I like that.
Thank you.
Alfredo, I'll start calling you.
Sergeant Scarborough, born and raised from the hills of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking of a redneck, he was a redneck with a capital R. And he had an appendage on his hand, which is called the swagger stick. Now, the swagger stick is about maybe 15 inches long, and it's round, half inch diameter maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Had a metal on either end, a metal piece.
Mm-hmm.
He would carry that thing around as like a toy, if you will.
Uh-huh.
It was an appendage of his hand. Okay. If you did something wrong, you felt it.
Mm-hmm.
In various locations of your head, usually. Or a shoulder, a neck.
What would be an example of something wrong? Whatever the Sarge thought.
That'd be interesting. Well, I'm not glad you... But anyway, you brought it up. I'll tell you a story referencing that swagger stick. Okay. Part of the training process at that time was you go to rifle range for a week or 2 weeks, actually. You're learning the proper nomenclature, you're learning the proper weaponry, you're learning how to shoot properly, etc., etc., etc. So once you qualified, some of us did not, and then you went to the mess hall, which is called mess duty. Now, in mess duty, a given platoon has a job. Either you're on a line serving other recruits, or in my case, I was standing at parade rest in front of, I think there were about 10 DIs. They would lift up a picture or something, of something to go back in the galley and fill it up and bring it back. So a picture is raised, I pick it up, I go to the galley, I fill it up, and I go back, I give it back to the DI, go back to parade rest. He pours a solution that was supposed to be coffee. It was syrup. Oh, my God. I mean, needless to say, it wasn't a very happy moment for that day for me.
What did he do?
Well, I ended up with that swagger stick getting whacked a couple of times. Then I ended up in the galley with a piece of steel wool. And I'm cleaning the stove, which is fairly warm, you see. There's no gloves. I had no gloves on. I have a white T-shirt, by the way. That white T-shirt became black after scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing. That was just one instance, you know, along the way.
Yeah.
But again, it was, it was part of the process, part of the punishment, discipline. Marine Corps is discipline. And now there were three words: improvise, adapt, overcome, which was made famous by Clint Eastwood in the movie called Heartbreak Ridge. If I may digress for a moment.
Yes, please.
This is a movie referencing a recon platoon of Marines This is in the early 80s. And Stouts, well, called Gunny's, he played a gunnery sergeant, mm-hmm. which is a the third highest enlisted rank in a corps.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he took over this platoon of Marines who were just going through the motions. They were not as disciplined as they should have been. So he came on board and got things squared away.
Cleaned them up.
And he did it. Mm-hmm. So it was, he's like 95 years old now. He's still going strong. God bless him.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, excellent movie. So, getting back to boot camp, it was 13 weeks, if I may. And then after that, graduation process, which again took place on May 6th of 1955. We all went home for 6 weeks, for 10 days leave. Now, that was a culture shock. Waiting for a bus to go home to Providence, Rhode Island. Now I'm back in Yamasee, South Carolina again. And I'm looking at worst. And coming from a very small town called Warwick, Rhode Island. Be specific, it's Shawmut Beach, Rhode Island. Which, if it's right, my backyard was Narragansett Bay. Rhode Island is the smallest state geographically. No, as you were. Yes, geographically, we are the smallest state.
Mm-hmm.
But with reference to population, we are next to Delaware. Delaware, they got us by a couple of people. That's where, as I said, where I grew up. So it was 10 days there. Then subsequent to that, I reported to advanced combat training in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And others went through that as well. And then from there, depending on your aptitude tests, you were tested along the way in boot camp as to where they felt where you would be best served in the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up administration, operations intelligence, behind a typewriter, behind a keyboard, behind communications, etc., etc., etc. So that was my MOS going forward in the Corps.
Military Occupational Specialty.
Military Occupational Specialty. Every branch has that in their vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And some are multiple. Some change. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a question of, where your needs may be. I wanted to go infantry. I wanted to, be a grunt, tanks, Amtrak, all that good stuff. The pride of our Corps. Yeah. The guts of our Corps. So I ended up a Marine Air. Helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft, etc., etc. So...
Did you fly or maintenance?
I did not. I had the occasion to fly the back seat of this. It was called a Piper Cub. It was hysterical. You got a picture of this deal. Now, here's an aircraft, has struts going off the fuselage, and has wings that go above the fuselage. Mm-hmm. It's one prop, and you're sitting, the pilot's in the front seat, and I'm back seat. Still got a joystick in the middle of you. Mm-hmm. And you're going back and forth. We're about 2,000, I'm in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Pali area. And not a uniform, but I'm also wearing a parachute. Now, I never jumped out of a plane in my life to begin with,
mm-hmm.
but had to wear this thing. So we're going along very nicely. And next thing I hear this putt, 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 putt. He cut the engine. He called Mayday, Mayday on the intercom with me. I got to jump out of this damn thing, right? Then sit down, Marine. So I didn't have to go anywhere, thank God. But it was hysterical.
What was the purpose of that?
Just he was to get just you... a wise ass, literally. That was him.
Yeah.
We had these outstanding Marines, outstanding pilots, And they were just one of those days he took me for a ride, like he did me a favor,
mm-hmm.
which was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was little kids called Kaneohe Bay. If you think of Hawaii, which is Waikiki, which is a beach area, the tourist area, it's on the other side of the island, which you have to go through a Pali Pass. It's a mountain range. I don't recall the exact mileage, but it was an area where you had to go around. Now they built a tunnel as we speak. This day and age, now there's a tunnel going through. But Kaneohe was a place. I've got pictures I can share somehow.
How long were you stationed there?
I was there for 2 years.
3 years? Why?
Two years.
Tough job. Yeah.
So I spent that time in that part of the world, and we were on various...
What was your MOS there?
It's called 7041, which is Administration, Air Administration.
Air Administration.
I was Operations and Intelligence. I was involved in special activities going on. I would have to write up I would be given a order to be transcribed properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was no such thing as automatic...
Yeah.
Copy machine. You had to crank it.
Crank it out. Oh, like a, what's it called? That purple ink?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody
was. Exactly. I mean, I'm a uniform. I'm wearing a uniform every day.
Yeah.
And you have to be very careful at where this ink gets all over you.
It was like, now, was the Vietnam War going on at the time?
Well, we were in the process. Let's put it that way. The Vietnam War didn't become official.
Uh-huh.
Till 1965.
Were you seeing build up going through Hawaii?
Well, there was always we had a brigade of Marines mm-hmm. on board, which took place. That was like what was called the 1st Marine Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
Was the address of you had maybe 10,000? Well, a division is like 10,000, 15,000. I forget the exact amount of Marines that were on board, plus naval personnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had always have naval personnel that trained with us, specifically they're called corpsmen.
Mm-hmm.
They saved many a life.
Right.
They bandaged many a wound. And as I said, they are part of our Corps.
Sure.
They wear the same uniform with their Navy insignias.
Mm-hmm.
Identical uniform. Except the Greens, they can wear that now. Otherwise, they're in a normal, their normal bell bottoms, mm-hmm. or they have a dress uniform, which signify that they are part of the Corps as well. Mm-hmm. So,
but the medical people have the same, same uniform. Yeah,
they are medical people. They're common, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Navy, by definition, you have various parts of the common. The medical staff, if you will, okay? You have the surgeons, you have the officers, you have who are dealing with hospitals. Then you have the other faction, which are Marines that go with a rifle company of Marines, the infantry. And they have their chiefs, master chiefs, who are responsible. And they are responsible for the commanding officer of the given Marine unit.
Mm-hmm.
So they are subjects to their commands, et cetera, et cetera. But in combat, they're there for us.
How many other assignments did you have? Geographical assignments?
Geographical, let's see. I think about four. I started after boot camp. I ended up in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Naval Air Station,
mm-hmm.
where I went through, like I'm looking at myself here. There's a photograph of us. This was taken
mm-hmm.
in September 30th, 1955. It's called A&P School. This is a photograph of Marines that will be going on to a various wing. These are all air people.
A&P.
A&P, Airmen Preparatory. Okay. And some of which went to... like electronics, you know, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, like myself, went to the administration part of it. So, That was that. And then from there, I ended up at Cherry Point, North Carolina, with the VMF 312. This was a, called the Chickawa Squadron. This was the, one of the first jets. This was, late 1955. The they were part of the Korean conflict, yeah. It was a war, people. Korea was a war, not a conflict.
Right there, tell them someplace. Now. You tell them.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Anyway, so that was F.J. Fury. It's called Checkerboard. It's a Checkerboard Squadron VMF 312. It was on the fuselage, well, the vertical stabilizer. Mm-hmm. And it, literally a checkerboard was painted on a vertical stabilizer. This is the aft end of an aircraft, the metal that goes directly north and south, mm-hmm. up and down, if you will. Yeah. Okay, and that's where the nomenclature is, and it has the aircraft is painted depending on the squadron. In some cases, it has the pilot's name. It has his rank. Mm-hmm. Typically, if the commanding officer has that info. And in combat, if you knock down a MiG, for example, they have the flag of that country's origin painted on the fuselage. Mm-hmm. And they, like, if you shot down at least five, you're called an ace.
Right.
Going forward. Mm-hmm. So that was there, and then from there went down to Roosevelt Roads in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
It's Puerto, it's Spanish, Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Can't pronounce it right, you know, yeah. Very important. So, for you Spanish-speaking people out there. And again, that was my interesting, that was my first plane ride, by the way, going from Cherry Point down to Roosevelt Roads,
really?
Which is the naval base in Puerto Rico.
Mm. Okay.
This aircraft that we were flying in, called a flying boxcar. Now this aircraft is a twin engine, had a dual fuselage. In the middle there was a that's where you sat, and you had the gear in the middle, and you're sitting facing each other along the bulkheads. Now you had at the rear of the fuselage was essentially open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ventilation. Well, this was, I believe, in end of March, early April of 1956. This happened going down, and we barely get off the deck. Only by the grace of God, I'm talking to you right now. But we made it, and so it was an adventure, to put it mildly. We arrived in Rosie Roads. Now, we went from like 35 degrees to about 85, 90 degrees in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hot. And then it started to rain. Now, we're living in pup tents. And we were told to dig a little channel around your tent in case of rain. We're living on it like it was on a hill. Well, some of us did not do that, you see.
Believe it or not, our time is up, and I want to thank you for being our little program here.
Okay.
And I'd like to tell our audience, particularly any people who are blind who are veterans, we'd like to have you on, too.